great plays. This afternoon, the National Broadcasting Company presents another in its series of great plays, Tartuffe by Molière. This masterpiece of the great French dramatist had, during its early years, a turbulent existence. In May 1664, the first three acts were presented at the court of Louis XIV. The young king found it highly amusing, but Anne of Austria, the queen mother, and all the religious or pseudo-religious cabal of the court raised such a howl of protest that further public presentation was forbidden. Then began several years of strife. Petition after petition went to the king, who, although sympathetic, refused to further draw the fire of the clergy. Molière, on the other hand, had many powerful friends who saw to it that private readings and performances were given, and through this medium the play grew to such popularity that finally, in February 1669, formal permission was granted for its public performance. Needless to say, Molière reopened his theater to packed houses. And to this day, the popularity of Tartuffe has never been dimmed. In his preface to the first edition of the play, Molière says, in part, "If the office of comedy is to correct the vices of men, I know not why any should have a special privilege of exemption. 'Tis a mighty stroke at any vice to make it the laughingstock of everybody. For men will easily suffer reproof, but they can by no means endure mockery. They will consent to be wicked, but not to be ridiculous." Now for the play. The action takes place in the house of Orgon at Paris. Orgon is a gentleman of substance, but given to crotchets and sudden tempers. That he comes by it honestly is evident from the conduct of his dear mother, Madame Pernell. She is just leaving the house after a visit.
"Come, come, and let me get away."
"You hurry so, I can hardly attend you."
"Then don't, my daughter-in-law. Stay where you are. I can dispense with your polite attention."
"We're only paying what is due you, mother. Why must you go away in such a hurry?"
"Because I can't endure your carryings on. And no one takes the slightest pains to please me. I leave your house, I tell you, quite disgusting."
"Not any
your servant wretch, my girl, and much too full of gab, and too impertinent and free with your advice on all occasions."
"But I..."
"Oh, but you are a fool, my boy. F-O-O-L just spells your name. Let Grandma tell you that."
"I think..."
"Oh, dearie me, his little sister. You're all demureness. Butter wouldn't melt in your mouth, one would think, to look at you. Still waters, though, they say. You know the proverb. And I don't like your goings or doings on the sly."
"But, Mother..."
"Oh, daughter, by your leave. Your conduct in everything is altogether wrong. You ought to set a good example for them. Their dear departed mother did much better. You are extravagant, and it offends me to see you always decked out like a princess. A woman who would please her husband's eyes alone wants no such wealth of finery."
"But, madam, after all..."
"Sir, as for you, the lady's brother, I esteem you highly, love and respect you. But, sir, all the same, if I were in my son's or husband's place, I'd urgently entreat you not to come within our doors. You preach a way of living that decent people cannot tolerate."
"Mr. Tartuffe, your friend is mighty lucky."
"He is a holy man and must be heeded. I can't endure with any show of patience to hear a scatterbrains like you attack him."
"What, shall I let a bigot critic caster come and usurp a tyrant's power here? And shall we never dare amuse ourselves till this fine gentleman deigns to consent?"
"If we must hark at him and heed his maxim, there's not a thing we do but what's the crime. He censures everything, this zealous carper."
"And all he censures is well censured, too. He wants to guide you on the way to heaven. My son should train you all to love him well."
"No, madam. Look you, nothing, not my father nor anything, can make me tolerate him.
Besides, 'tis downright scandalous to see this unknown upstart master of the house, this vagabond, who hadn't when he came shoes to his feet or clothing worth 6 farthings, and who so far forgets his place as now to censure everything and rule the roast."
"Mercy sakes alive! Things would go better if all were governed by his pious order."
"He passes very faint in your opinion. In fact, he's nothing but a hypocrite."
"Just listen to her tongue."
"I wouldn't trust him, nor yet his Lawrence, without bonds and surety."
"I don't know what the servant's character may be, but I can guarantee the master, a holy man. You hate him and reject him because he tells home truths to all of you. 'Tis sin alone that moves his heart to anger, and heaven's interest is his only motive."
"Of course. But why, especially of late, can he let nobody come near the house? Is heaven offended at a civil call that he should make so great a fuss about it? I'll tell you, if you like, just what I think. Upon my word, he's jealous of our mistress."
"You hold your tongue and think what you are saying. He's not alone in censuring these visits. The turmoil that attends your sort of people, their carriages forever at the door, and all their noisy footmen flock together, annoy the neighborhood and raise a scandal. I'd gladly think there's nothing really wrong, but it makes talk, and that's not as it should be.
Hey, madam, can you hope to keep folks' tongues from wagging? It would be a grievous thing if, for the fear of idle talk about us, we had to sacrifice our friends.
These arguments are nothing to the purpose. Daughter-in-law, one never has a chance to get a word in edgewise at your house, because this lady holds the floor all day.
Oh,
but nonetheless, I mean to have my say, too. I tell you that my son did nothing wiser in all his life than take this godly man into his household. Heaven sent him here in your great need to make you all repent for your salvation. You must hearken to him. He censures nothing but deserves his censure. These visits, these assemblies, and these balls are all inventions of the evil spirit. You never hear a word of godliness at them, but idle cackle, nonsense, flim-flam. So, now the gentleman must snicker, must he? Go, find fools like yourself to make you laugh. Daughter, goodbye. No, not one word more. As for this house, I leave the half unsaid, but I shan't soon step foot in it again.
I won't escort her down, for fear she might fall foul of me again. A good old lady.
Bless us, what a pity. She shouldn't hear the way you speak of her.
How she got angry with us, all for nothing. And how she seems possessed with her tough tooth.
Her case is nothing, though, beside her son. To see him, you'd say he's 10 times worse. He's like a man besotted since he's been so taken with this tattoo. He calls him brother, loves him 100 times as much as mother, son, daughter, and wife. He tells him all his secrets, and lets him guide his acts and rule his conscience. He fondles and embraces him. A sweetheart could not, I think, be loved more tenderly. At table, he must have the seat of honor, while with delight our master sees him eat as much as 6 men could. We must give up the choicest tidbits to him. If he belches, master exclaims, God bless you. Oh, he dotes upon him. He's his universe, his hero. He's lost in constant admiration, quotes him on all occasions, takes his trifling acts for wonders, and his words for oracles. The fellow knows his dupe and makes the most of it. He fools him with 100 masks of virtue, gets money from him all the time by canting, and takes upon himself to carpet us. Even his silly coxcomb of a lackey makes it his business to instruct us, too. He comes with rolling eyes to preach at us, and throws away our ribbons, rouge, and patches, the wretch.
You're very lucky to have missed the speech she gave me at the door. I see my husband is home again. He hasn't seen me yet, so I'll go up and wait till he comes in.
And I, to save time, will await him here. I'll merely say good morning and be gone. Here's Damis.
I wish you'd say a word to him about my sister's marriage. I suspect Tartu proposes it.
Good morning, brother.
I was just going, but I am glad to greet you. Things are not far advanced yet in the country.
Doreen, just wait a bit, brother-in-law. Let me allay my first anxiety by asking news about my family. Doreen, has everything gone well these last 2 days? What's happening? And how is everybody?
Madam had fever and a splitting headache day before yesterday, all day and evening.
And how about Tartuffe?
Tartuffe? He's well. He's mighty well. Stout, fat, fair, rosy-lipped.
Poor man.
At evening, she had nausea and couldn't touch a single thing for supper. Her headache still was so severe.
And how about Tartuffe?
Oh, he slept alone before her and unctuously ate up 2 partridges as well as 1/2 leg of mutton deviled.
Poor man.
All night she couldn't get a wink of sleep. The fever racked her so. And we had to sit up with her till daylight.
How about Tartuffe?
Gently inclined to slumber, he left the table, went into his room, got himself straight into a good warm bed, and slept quite undisturbed until next morning.
Poor man.
At last she let us all persuade her and got up courage to be bled. And then she was relieved at once.
Oh, and how about Tartuffe?
He plucked up courage properly, bravely entrenched his soul against all evils, and to replace the blood that she had lost, he drank at breakfast 4 huge draughts of wine.
Oh, man.
So now they both are doing well. And I'll go straightway and inform my mistress how pleased you are at her recovery.
Brother, she ridiculed you to your face. And I, though I don't want to make you angry, must tell you candidly that she's quite right. Was such infatuation ever heard of?
Stop there, good brother. You do not know the man you're speaking of.
Since you will have it so, I do not know him. But after all, to tell what sort of man he is...
Dear brother... You'd be charmed to know him. Your raptures over him would have no end. He is a man who, in fact, a man. Whoever does his will knows perfect peace. His converse has transformed me quite. He weans my heart from every friendship, teaches me to have no love for anything on earth, and I could see my brother, children, mother, and wife all die and never care a spot.
Your feelings are humane, I must say, brother.
If you'd seen him as I saw him first, you would have loved him just as much as I. He came to church each day with contrite mien, kneeled on both knees right opposite my place, drew the eyes of all the congregation to watch the fervor of his prayers to heaven. With deep-drawn sighs and great ejaculations, he humbly kissed the earth at every moment. And when I left the church, he ran before me to give me holy water at the door. I learned his poverty and who he was. At length, heaven bade me take him to my home. And since that day, all seems to prosper here. He censures everything. And for my sake, he even takes great interest in my wife. And lets me know who ogles her, and seems 6 times as jealous as I am myself. You'd not believe how far his zeal can go. Calls himself a sinner just for trifles. The merest nothing is enough to shock him. So much so that the other day I heard him accuse himself for having, while at prayer, in too much anger, caught and killed a flea.
Sounds, brother, you are mad, I think. Or else you're making sport of me with such a speech. What are you driving at with all this nonsense?
Brother, your language smacks of atheism, and I suspect your soul's a little tainted therewith. I've preached to you a score of times that you'll draw down some judgment on your head.
That is the usual strain of all your kind. They must have everyone as blind as they. They call you atheist if you have good eyes. And if you don't adore their vain grimaces, you've neither faith nor care for sacred things.
You are the sole expounder of the doctrine. Wisdom shall die with you, no doubt, good brother.
I'm not the sole expounder of the doctrine, and wisdom shall not die with me, good brother. But this I know, though it be all my knowledge, that there is a difference twixt false and true.
My dear good brother-in-law, have you quite done?
Yes.
I am your humble servant.
Just a word. We'll drop that other subject. But you know Valère has had the promise of your daughter.
Yes.
You have named the happy day.
It is true.
Then why put off the celebration of it?
I can't say.
Can you have some other plan in mind?
Perhaps.
You mean to break your word?
I don't say that.
I hope no obstacle can keep you from performing what you promised.
Well, that depends.
Why must you beat about? Valère has sent me here to settle matters.
Heaven be praised.
What answer shall I take him?
Why, anything you please.
But we must know your plans. What are they?
I shall do the will of heaven.
Come, be serious. You've given your promise to Valère. Now, will you keep it?
Goodbye.
His love, methinks, has much to fear. I must go let him know what's happening here.
Now, Marianne.
Yes, Father?
Come, I'll tell you a secret.
Yes?
Marianne, in you I've always found a daughter dutiful and gentle. So I've always loved you dearly.
I'm grateful for your fatherly affection.
Well spoken, daughter. Now, prove you deserve it by doing as I wish in all respects.
Well, to do so is the height of my ambition.
Excellent. Well, what say you of Tartuffe?
Who, I?
Yes, you. Look to it how you answer.
Why, I'll say of him anything you please.
Well spoken, the good girl. Say then, my daughter, that all his person shines with noble merit, that he has won your heart, and you would like to have him, by my choice, become your husband. Eh?
Eh?
What say you?
Please, what did you say?
What?
Surely I mistook you, sir.
How now?
Who is it, Father, you would have me say has won my heart, and I would like to have become my husband by your choice?
Tartuffe.
But, Father, I protest it isn't true. Why should you make me tell this dreadful lie?
Because I mean to have it to be the truth. Let this suffice for you. I've settled it.
What, Father, you would...
Yes, child, I'm resolved to graft Tartuffe into my family. So he must be your husband. That I settled. And since you're... Doreen, what are you doing there? Your curiosity is keen, my girl, to make you come eavesdropping on a soul.
Upon my word, I don't know how the rumor got started. This was guesswork, a mere chance. But I had heard already of this match and treated it as utter stuff and nonsense.
What? Is the thing incredible?
So much so I don't believe it even from yourself.
I know a way to make you credit it.
Oh, no, you're telling us a fairy tale.
I'm telling you just what will happen shortly. Daughter, what I say is in good earnest.
Marianne, don't take your father seriously. He's fooling.
But I tell you...
No use. They won't believe you.
If I let my anger...
Well, then, we do believe you. And the worst for you it is. What? Can a grown-up man with that expansive beard across his face be mad enough to want...
You hark to me. You've taken on yourself here in this house a sort of free familiarity that I don't like, I tell you frankly, girl.
There, let's not get angry, sir, I beg you. But are you making game of everybody? Your daughter's not cut out for bigot's meat.
You hold your tongue. And know the less he has, the better cause we have to honor him. His poverty is honest poverty. It should exalt him more than worldly grandeur, for he has let himself be robbed of all through careless disregard of temporal things and fixed attachment to things eternal. My health, they set him on his feet again. Win back his property, a fair estate. He has a home, so I am informed, and prove him for what he is, a true-born gentleman.
Yes, so says himself. Such vanity but ill accords with pious living, sir. Can you without compunction give a man like him possession of a girl like her?
So, I must learn what's what from her, you see.
You might do worse than follow my advice.
Daughter, we can't waste time upon this nonsense. I know what's good for you, and I'm your father. True, I had promised you to young Valère, but first they tell me he's inclined to gamble. And then I fear his faith is not quite sound. I haven't noticed. He's regular at church.
You'd have him run there just when you do, like those who go on purpose to be seen.
I don't ask your opinion on the matter. In short, the other is in heaven's best graces, and that is riches, quite beyond compare. This match will bring you every joy you long for, and you may do with him whatever you please.
With him? Do not, but give him horns, I'll warrant.
Out on the wench!
I tell you, he's come out for it. However great your daughter's virtue, sir, his destiny is sure to prove the stronger.
Have done with interrupting. Hold your tongue. Don't poke your nose in other people's business.
If I make bold, sir, it is for your own good.
You're too officious. Pray you hold your tongue.
His love of you.
I want none of your love.
And I will love you in your own despite.
You will, eh?
Yes, your honor's dear to me. I can't endure to see you made the butt of all men's ridicule.
Won't you be still?
It would be a sin to let you make this match.
Won't you be still, I say, you impudent viper.
You are pious, then you lose your temper.
No, I'm all wrought up with your confounded nonsense. Now, once more, I tell you, hold your tongue. Oh, daughter, you're such a pestilent hussy. There, I can't live with her any longer without sin. I can't discuss things in the state I'm in. Oh, my mind's so flustered by her insolent talk. To calm myself, I must go take a walk.
Marianne, have you lost the tongue from out your head?
What can I do? My father is the master.
Really? Everything to ward off such disaster.
But what, Doreen?
Tell him one doesn't love by proxy. Tell him you'll marry for yourself, not him.
A father's right has said it seems to me that I can never dare to say a word.
Come, talk it out. Hella has asked your hand. Now, do you love him, pray, or do you not?
Doreen, you wrong me greatly if you doubt it. I share my inmost feelings all too plainly.
So then you love him?
Yes, devotedly.
And he returns your love, apparently?
I think so.
And you both alike are eager to be well married to each other?
Surely.
Then what's your plan about this other match?
To kill myself? If it is forced upon me.
Good, that's a remedy I hadn't thought of. Just die, and everything will be all right.
Oh, dear Doreen, you get in such a temper. You have no sympathy for people's troubles.
I have no sympathy when folk talk nonsense and fatten out as you do at a pinch.
But shall I publicly refuse and scorn this man, and make it plain that I'm in love? Shall I cast off for him, whatever he be, womanly modesty and filial duty? You ask me to display my love in public?
No, no, I ask you nothing. You shall be Monsieur Tati. Oh, now I think of it, I would be wrong to turn you from this marriage. So fine a match. Oh, an excellent good match. Monsieur Tatou, sure, take it all in all. It's not a man to sneeze at. Oh, by no means. He's noble in his parish. Handsome, too. Red ears and high complexion. Oh, my lord, you'd be too happy, sure, with him for husband.
Oh, dear. If I say I love Valère...
No, no, Tatouche, your man, and you shall taste him.
Oh, you know, I've always trusted you, Doreen. I help
you. No, you shall be by my feet. Tartuffe aside.
Well, then, since you've no pity for my fate, let me take counsel only of despair. It will advise and help and give me courage. There's one short cure, I know, for all my troubles.
There. Come back. I can't be angry long. I must take pity on you after all.
Oh, don't you see, Doreen? If I must bear this martyrdom, I certainly shall die.
No, don't you fret. We'll surely find some way to hinder this.
Here's Valère, your lover.
Madam. A piece of news quite new to me has just come out, and very fine it is.
What piece of news?
Your marriage with Tartuffe.
It is true. My father has his plan in mind.
Your father, madam?
Yes. He changed his plans and did but now propose it to me.
What? Seriously?
Yes. He was serious and openly insisted on the match.
And what's your resolution in the matter, madam?
I don't know.
That's a pretty answer. You don't know.
No.
No?
What do you advise?
My advice is to marry him, by all means.
That's your advice?
Yes.
Do you mean it?
Surely, a splendid choice, and whether you're acceptance.
Oh, very well, sir. I shall take your counsel.
You'll find no trouble taking it, I warrant.
No more than you did giving it, be sure.
I gave it truly, to oblige you, madam.
And I shall take it to oblige you, sir. Let's see what this affair will come to.
So, that is your love. And it was all deceit when you...
I beg you, say no more of that. You told me squarely, sir, I should accept the husband that is offered me, and I shall...
My season trumpet fools these lovers do.
But come now, have I not a just complaint?
And are you not yourself the most ungrateful?
Leave this discussion till another time. Now think you how you'll stave off this plaguey marriage.
Oh, then tell us how to go about it, Doreen.
Well, you'd better humor his notions by a semblance of consent, so that in case of danger, you can still find means to block the marriage by delay. If you gain time, the rest is easy, trust me. But now, Miss, we mustn't find you chattering together. Valère, you go at once, and set your friends at work to make him keep his word to you. While we will bring the brother's influence to bear, and get the stepmother on our side, too. Goodbye.
Whatever effort we may make, my greatest hope, be sure, must rest on you.
I cannot answer for my father's sins, But no one save Valère shall ever have me.
Oh, you thrill me through with joy. Whatever comes.
Oh, this lover's never done with prattling. Now go.
Oh, one last word.
Look at Gabriel and the Pater. Be off. I just saw you. And you marry Anne, and I cover.
May lightning strike me dead this very instant if I don't do straightway something desperate.
I beg you, moderate this towering passion. Your father did but merely mention it. Not all things that are talked of turn to fact. The road is long sometimes from plans to act.
No, I must end this paltry fellow's plot, and he shall hear from me a truth or two.
Go slow now. Just you leave the fellow, your father too, in your stepmother's hands. She has some influence with his passion. He makes a point of heeding all she says. And I suspect that he's fond of her. Would it were true. It would be the height of humor. Now she sent for him in your behalf to sound him on this marriage.
I may be present at this interview.
Oh, no, they must be left alone.
I won't so much as speak to him.
Go on, we know you and your high tantrums. Just the way to spoil things. Be off.
No, I must see. I'll keep my
temper. I'll tell you what. He's coming. Hide. Yes. Here, in the closet.
Lauren, put up my haircloth, shirt, and skirts. And pray that heaven may shed its light upon you. If any come to see me, say I'm gone to share my arms among the prisoners.
What affectation and what showing off.
What do you want with me?
To tell you...
Before you speak, pray take this handkerchief.
What?
Cover up that bosom which I can't endure to look on. Things like that offend our souls and fill our minds with sinful thoughts.
Are you so tender to temptation, then? And has the flesh such power upon your senses? For my part, I'm not so prone to lust. And I could see you stripped from head to foot, and all your hide not set me in the lead.
Oh, show in your speech some little modesty, or I must instantly take leave of you.
Oh, no, I'll leave you to yourself. I've only one thing to say. Madam will soon be down, and begs the favor of a word with you.
Ah, oh, willingly.
How gentle all at once. My faith, I still believe I fit upon it.
Will she come soon?
I think I hear her now. Yes, here she is herself. I'll leave you with her.
May heaven's overflowing kindness ever give you good health of body and of soul, and bless your days according to the wishes and prayers of its most humble votary.
I'm very grateful for your pious wishes, but let's sit down so we may talk at ease.
And how are you recovered from your illness?
Quite well. The fever soon let go its hold.
My prayers, I fear, have not sufficient merit to have drawn down this favor from on high. But each entreaty that I made to heaven had for its object your recovery.
Oh. You're too solicitous on my behalf.
We could not cherish your dear health too much. I would have given mine to help restore it.
That's pushing Christian charity too far. I owe you many thanks for so much kindness.
I do far less for you than you deserve.
There is a matter that I wish to speak of in private. I'm glad there's no one here to listen.
Madam, I'm overjoyed. 'Tis sweet to find myself alone with you. This is an opportunity I've asked of heaven many times. Till now, easy.
All that I wish is just a word from you, quite frank and open, hiding nothing from me.
I, too, could wish, as heaven's a special favor, to lay my soul quite open to your eyes and swear to you the trouble that I made about those visits which your charms attract does not result from any hatred toward you, but rather from a passionate devotion and purest motive.
That is how I take it. I think it is my salvation that concerns you.
Madam, 'tis so. And such is my devotion.
Oh, but you squeeze my hand too hard.
Excess of zeal. In no way could I ever mean to hurt you, and I'd as soon...
But what is your hand doing on my knee?
Feeling your gown. The stuff is very soft.
Let be, I beg you, I'm very sickly.
Dear me, how wonderful in workmanship this lace is. They do marvels nowadays. Things of all kinds were never better made.
Yes, very true. But let us come to business. They say my husband means to break his word to Valère and marry Marianne to you. Is it true?
He did hint some such thing. But truly, madam, that's not the happiness I'm yearning after. I see elsewhere the sweet, compelling charms of such a joy as fills my every wish.
You mean you cannot love terrestrial things?
The heart within my bosom is not stone.
I will believe your sighs all tend to heaven, and nothing here below can stay your thoughts.
Love for the beauty of eternal things cannot destroy our love for earthly beauty. Our mortal senses well may be entranced by perfect works that heaven has fashioned here. Its charms reflected shine in such as you, and in yourself its rarest miracles. It has displayed such marvels in your face that eyes are dazed and hearts are rapt away. At first I trembled, lest this secret love might be the evil spirit's artful snare. I even schooled my heart to flee your beauty, thinking it was a bar to my salvation. But soon enlightened, all lovely one, I saw how this my passion may be blameless, how I may make it fit with modesty, and thus completely yield my heart to it. Tis, I must own, a great presumption in me to dare make you the offer of my heart. My love hopes all things from your perfect goodness, and nothing from my own poor weak endeavor. You are my hope, my stay, my peace of heart. On you depends my torment or my bliss, and by your doom of judgment I shall be blessed, if you will, or damned by your decree.
Your declaration terms most gallantly, but truly it is just a bit surprising. You should have better armed your heart, methinks, and taken thought somewhat on such a matter. A pious man like you know nothing.
Though pious, I am nonetheless a man, and when a man beholds your heavenly charms, the heart surrenders and can think no more. I know such words seem strange coming from me, but, madam, I'm no angel after all. If you condemn my frankly made avowal, you have only your charming self to blame. If, in your goodness, you will give me comfort and condescend unto my nothingness, I'll ever pay you, oh, sweet miracle, an unexampled worship and devotion. Then, too, with me your honor runs no risk. With me you need not fear a public scandal. These court gallants that women are so fond of are boastful of their acts and vain in speech. They always brag in public of their progress. But men like me are so discreet in love that you may trust their lasting secrecy. The care we take to guard our own good name may fully guarantee the one we love. So you may find, with hearts like ours sincere, love without scandal, pleasure without fear.
I've heard you through. Your speech is clear, at least. But do you not fear that I may take a fancy to tell my husband of your gallant passion? And that a prompt report of this affair may somewhat change the friendship which he bears you?
I know that you're too good and generous, but you will pardon my temerity. Excuse, upon the score of human frailty, the violence of passion that offends you. And not forget, when you consult your mirror, that I'm not blind, and man is made of flesh.
Well, some women might do otherwise, perhaps. I am willing to employ discretion and not repeat the matter to my husband. But, in return, I'll ask one thing of you, that you urge forward frankly and sincerely the marriage of Valère to Marianne, that you give up the unjust influence by which you hope to win another's right.
No, I say. This thing must be made public. I was just there and overheard it all, and heaven's goodness must have brought me there on purpose to confound this scoundrel's pride and grant me means to take a single vengeance on his hypocrisy and arrogance and undeceive my father, showing up the rascal court and making love to
him. No. It is enough that he reform, endeavoring to deserve the favor shown. And since I promise, do not you belie me. It's not my way to make a public scandal. An honest wife will scorn to heed such follies and never fret her husband's ears with them.
You've reasons of your own for acting thus, and I have mine for doing otherwise. To spare him now would be a mockery. His bigot's pride has triumphed all too long over my righteous anger and has caused far too much trouble in our family. No, by your leave, I'll not be counseled. I'm overjoyed. You needn't try to tell me I must give up the pleasure of revenge. I'll make an end of this affair at once. And to content me, here's my father now. Father, we've news to welcome your arrival that's altogether novel and surprising.
So?
You are well paid for your caressing care. And this fine gentleman rewards your love most handsomely with zeal that seeks no less than your dishonor.
Eh?
As has now been proven, I just surprised him, making to your wife the shameful offer of a guilty love. She, somewhat over gentle and discreet, insisted that the thing should be concealed. But I will not condone such shamelessness, nor so far wrong you as to keep it secret.
Yes, I believe a wife should never trouble her husband's peace of mind with such vain gossip. A woman's honor does not hang on telling. It is enough if she defend herself.
Just then, can what I hear be credited?
Yes, brother, I am wicked. I am guilty. A miserable sinner steeped in evil. The greatest criminal that ever lived. Each moment of my life is stained with soilures. And all is but a mass of crime and filth. Believe their stories. Arm your wrath against me, and drive me like a villain from your house.
I cannot have so great a share of shame, but what I have deserved the greater still.
Damis, you miscreant. Can you dare with such a falsehood to try to stain the whiteness of his virtue?
What? The feigned meekness of this hypocrite makes you
disgrace. Silence, cursed blade!
No, let him speak. You chide him wrongfully. You do far better to believe his tales. Why favor me in such a matter? How can you know of what I'm capable? And should you trust my outward semblance, brother, or judge therefrom that I'm the better man? No, no, no. You let appearances deceive you. I'm anything but what I'm thought to be. Alas, and though all men believe me godly, the simple truth is, I'm a worthless creature. Yes, my dear son, say on. Call me traitor, abandoned scoundrel, thief and murderer. Heap on me names yet more detestable, and I shall not gainsay you. I've deserved them. I'll bear this ignominy on my knees to expiate in shame the crimes I've done.
Oh, brother, 'tis too much. Damis, you'll not relent, you blackguard?
What? His talk can so deceive
you. Silence, you scoundrel! Brother, rise, I beg you. Oh, infamous villain.
Can he...
Silence!
What? I can...
Not a word. I break your every bone.
Brother, in heaven's name, don't be angry with him. I'd rather bear myself the bitterest torture than have him get a scratch on my account.
Ungrateful monster!
Stop. Upon my knees, I beg you pardon him.
Oh, alas. Oh, how can you? Villain, behold his goodness.
So, you... Be still! Well, I can't even...
Be still, I say! I know your motives for this attack. You hate him, all of you. Wife, children, servants, all let loose upon him. You have recourse to every shameful trick to drive this godly man out of my house. The more you strive to rid yourselves of him, the more I'll strive to make him stay with me. I'll have him straightway married to my daughter, just to confound the pride of all of you.
What, will you force her to accept his hand?
Yes, and this very evening, to enrage you, you young rascal. Oh, I'll brave you all and show you that I'm the master and must be obeyed. Now down upon your knees this instant, rogue, and take back what you said and ask his pardon.
Who? I? Ask pardon of that cheating scoundrel?
Do you resist, you beggar, and insult him? A cudgel, here, a cudgel!
No!
Don't restrain me! Off with you! Leave my house this instant, sir! I never dare to set foot in it again!
Yes, I'll leave your house, but first...
Leave it quickly, you reprobate! I disinherit you and give you to my curse into the bargain! What? So insult a saintly man of God!
Heaven forgive him. All the pain he gives me.
Sir.
Could you but know with what distress I see them try to vilify me to my brother.
No.
The mere thought of such ingratitude makes my soul suffer torture bitterly. My horror at it. Oh, my heart so full I cannot speak. I think I'll die.
Oh, the scoundrel. I wish I'd never let you go, but slain you on the spot with my own hand. Brother, compose yourself. Don't be angry.
Nay, brother. Let us end these painful quarrels. I see what troublous times I bring upon you, and think 'tis needful that I leave the house.
What? You can't mean it.
Yes, they hate me here, and try, I find, to make you doubt my faith.
What of it? You find I listen to them?
No doubt they won't stop there. These same reports you now reject may someday win a hearing.
No, brother, no, never, never.
Ah, my friend, a woman may easily mislead her husband.
No.
So let me quickly go and thus remove all cause for such attack.
No. You shall stay. My life depends upon it.
Then I must mortify myself. And yet, if you should wish...
No, never.
Very well, then. No more of that. But I shall rule my conduct to fit the case. Honor is delicate, and friendship binds me to forestall suspicion, prevent all scandal, and avoid your wife.
No. You shall haunt her, just to spite them all. 'Tis my delight to set them in a rage. You shall be seen together at all hours. And what is more, the better to defy them, I'll have no other heir but you. And straightway I'll go and make a deed of gift to you, drawn in due form of all my property. A good, true friend, my son-in-law-to-be, is more to me than son and wife and kindred. You will accept my offer, will you not?
Heaven's will be done in everything.
We'll go make haste to draw the deed aright, and then let envy burst itself with spite.
So, I am glad to find you all together. Marianne? Here, here's the contract that shall make you happy. My dear, you know already what it means.
Oh, Father, I beg you, in the name of heaven that knows my grief, and by what air can move you, relax a little your paternal rights, and free my love from this obedience. Oh, do not make me by your harsh command complain to heaven you ever were my father. I beg you upon my knees, save me from the torment of being possessed by one whom I abhor.
Come, come, my heart, be firm. No human weakness.
I'm not jealous of your love for him. Display it freely. Give him your estate. And if that's not enough, add all of mine. I willingly agree. And give it up. If only you not give him me, your daughter. Oh, rather let a convict rendered rule wear out the wretched days that heaven allots me.
These girls are ninnies. Always turning nuns when fathers thwart their silly love affairs. Get on your feet. The more you hate him, the more will help you earn your soul's salvation. So, mortify your senses by this marriage, and don't vex me about it anymore.
Master, but...
You hold your tongue before your betters.
Oh.
Don't say I dare to say a single word, I tell you.
If you will let me answer and advise...
Brother, I value your advice most highly. It is well thought out. No better could be had, but you'll allow me not to follow it.
Your blindness makes me quite astounded at you. You are bewitched with this dark truth to disbelieve the things we tell you happened here today.
I am your humble servant and can see things when they're plain as noses on folks' faces. I know you're partial to my rascal son and didn't dare to disavow the trick he tried to play on this poor man. Besides, you were too calm to be believed. If that had happened, you'd have been far more disturbed.
And must our honor always rush to arms at the mere mention of innocent love? Or can we answer no attack upon it except with blazing eyes and lips of scorn? I like my virtue not to be a vixen, and I believe a quiet, cold rebuff no less effective to repulse a lover.
I know, and you can't throw me off the scent.
Oh, once more, I am astounded at your weakness. I wonder what your unbelief would answer if I should let you see we've told the truth.
See it?
Yes.
Nonsense.
Oh, come. If I should find a way to make you see it clear as day...
All rubbish.
What a man. But answer me. I'm not supposing now that you believe. But let's suppose that here, from proper hiding, you should be made to see and hear all plainly. What would you say then to your man of virtue?
Why, then I'd say... Say nothing. It can't be.
Oh, your error has endured too long already. And quite too long you've branded me a liar. I must at once, for my own satisfaction, make you a witness of the things we've told you.
Amen, amen. I take you at your word. We'll see what tricks you have and how you'll keep your promise.
Doreen, send Tactus to me.
The man's a crafty dodger. Perhaps you'll find it difficult to catch him.
Oh, no. A lover's never hard to cheat. And self-conceit leads straight to self-deceit. Bid him come down to me and you withdraw.
Madam.
And now, bring up this table and get under it.
What?
One essential is to hide you well.
Why under there?
Oh, do as I say. I know what I'm about, and you shall see. Get under now, I tell you. And once there, be careful no one either sees or hears you.
I'm going a long way to humor you, I must say. But I'll see you through your scheme.
Well, then you'll have, I think, no more to say. But mind, I'm going to meddle with strange matters. Prepare yourself to be in no wise shocked. Whatever I may say must pass, because 'tis only to convince you as I promised. And... the things shall go no further than you choose. So when you think they've gone quite far enough, it is for you to stop his mad pursuit, to spare your wife and not expose me farther than you shall need yourself to undeceive. It is your own affair, and you must end it. Oh, here he comes. Now get under the table and don't show yourself.
Madam, they told me that you wished to see me.
Yes, I have secrets for your ear alone. But shut the door first and look everywhere for fear of spies. We surely can't afford another scene like that we had. Ah, damn it, did frighten me so before, on your account. You saw I did my best to baffle his design and calm his anger, but I was so confused I never thought to contradict his story. But now we're on a safer footing. The high esteem you're held in laid the storm. My husband can have no suspicion of you, and even insists, to spite the scandalmongers, that we shall be together constantly. So that is how, without the risk of blame, I can be here locked up with you alone,
and can reveal to you my heart, perhaps all too ready to allow your passion.
Your words are somewhat hard to understand, madam. Just now you used a different style.
If that refusal has offended you, how little do you know a woman's heart? How ill you guess what it would have you know when it prevents so feeble a defense. Always at first, how modestly resist the tender feelings you inspired us with. But now that I have made bold to speak, pray tell me. Should I have tried to keep dummies from speaking? Should I have heard the offer of your heart so quietly and suffered all your pleading and taking it just as I did, remember? If such a declaration had not pleased me. And when I tried my utmost to persuade you not to accept the marriage that was talked of, what should my earnestness have hinted to you if not the interest that you've inspired? And my chagrin, should such a match compel me to share a heart I want all to myself.
'Tis past a doubt the height of happiness to hear such words from lips we dote upon. My heart employs its utmost zeal to please you, and counts your love its one beatitude. And yet that herd must beg that you allow it to doubt a little its felicity. And if I may express myself quite plainly, I cannot trust these two enchanting words until the granting of some little favor I sigh for shall assure me of their truth and build within my soul on firm foundations a lasting faith in your sweet charity.
must you go so fast and all at once exhaust the whole love of a woman's heart? Are you not yet satisfied and will not be without the granting of her utmost favor?
The less a blessing is deserved, the less we dare to hope for it. And words alone can ill assuage our love's desires. So I shall trust to nothing, madam, till you have convinced my love by something real.
Oh, how your love enacts the tyrant's rule and throws my mind into a strange confusion. But nay, is it decent to be so exacting and so abused by urgency the weakness you may discover in a woman's heart?
But if my worship wins your gracious favor, then why refuse me some proof thereof?
But how can I consent to what you wish without offending heaven you talk so much of?
If heaven is all that stands now in my way, I'll easily remove that little hindrance. Your heart need not hold back for such a trifle.
Oh, but they affright us so with heaven's commands.
I can dispel these foolish fears, dear madam. I know the art of pacifying scruples. Heaven forbids, 'tis true, some satisfactions. But we find means to make things right with heaven. There is a science, madam, that instructs us how to enlarge the limits of our conscience according to our various occasions and rectify the evil of the deed according to our purity of motive. I'll duly teach you all these secrets, madam. You only need to let yourself be guided. Content my wishes, have no fear at all. I answer for it and take the sin upon me. Your cough is very bad.
Oh, yes. Yes, I'm in torture.
Would you accept this bit of licorice?
The case is obstinate, I find, and all the licorice in the world will do no good.
It is very trying.
More than words can say.
Well, in any case, your scruples easily removed. With me, you're sure of secrecy, and there's no harm unless a thing is known. The public scandal is what brings offense. And secret sinning is not sin at all.
So then I see I must resolve to yield. I must consent to grant you everything and cannot hope to give full satisfaction or win full confidence at lesser cost. But if my consent give reason for offense, so much the worse for him who forced me to it. The fault can surely not be counted mine.
It need not, madam, and the thing itself...
Open the door, I pray you, and just see whether my husband is not there in the hall.
Why take such care for him? Between ourselves, he is a man to lead round by the nose. He's capable of glorying in our meetings. I've fooled him so he'd see all and deny it.
No matter, go, I beg you. Look about and carefully examine every corner.
I own a man abominable. I can't get over it. The whole thing floors.
What? You've come out so soon? Go back under the table. It is not time yet. Wait till the end to see and make quite certain. And don't believe a thing on mere conjecture.
Nothing more wicked ever came out of hell.
dear me, don't credit things too lightly, nor let yourself go fairly convinced. Don't deal too soon, for fear you'll be mistaken.
All things conspire toward my satisfaction, madam. I've searched the whole apartment through. There's no one here. And now my ravished soul...
Softly!
What? You are too eager in your amours. You needn't be so passionate. My holy man. You want to put it on me. How is your soul abandoned to temptation? Marry my daughter, eh? I want my wife, too. I doubted long enough if this was earnest, expecting all the time the tone would change. But now the proof's been carried far enough. I'm satisfied and ask no more for my part.
It was quite against my character to play this part, but I was forced to treat you so.
What, you believe?
Come now. No protestations. Get out from here and make no fuss about it.
But my intent...
That talk is out of season. You leave my house this instant.
You're the one to leave it. You who play the master here. This house belongs to me, I'll have you know. And show you plainly it's no use to turn to these low tricks to pick a quarrel with me. And that you can't insult me at your pleasure. For I have wherewith to confound your lies, avenge offended heaven, and compel those to repent who talk to me of leaving.
What sort of speech is this? What can it mean?
Oh, my faith, I'm dazed. This is no laughing matter.
What?
From his words, I see my great mistake. The deed of gift is one thing troubles me.
Deed of gift?
Yes, yes. That is past recall, but I've another thing to make me anxious.
And what is that?
You shall know all. Let's see at once whether a certain box is still upstairs.
Whither away so fast?
Oh, how should I know?
Methinks we should begin by taking counsel to see what can be done to meet the case.
Oh, I'm all worked up about that wretched box. More than all else, it drives me to despair.
That box must hide some mighty mystery.
Argus, my friend who is in trouble, brought it himself most secretly. Left it with me. He chose me in his exile for this trust. And on these documents, from what he said, I judge his life and property depend.
How could you trust them to another's hands?
By reason of a conscientious scruple. I went straight to my traitor to confide in him. His sophistry made me believe that I must give the box to him to keep, so that in case of search, I might deny my having it at all, and still, by favor of this evasion, keep my conscience clear, even in taking oath against the truth.
Your case is bad, so far as I can see. This deed of gift, this trusting of the secret to him, were both, to state my frank opinion, steps that you took too lightly. He can lead you to any length with these for hostages, and since he holds you at such disadvantage, you would be still more imprudent to provoke him. So you must go some gentler way about.
What? Can a soul so base, a heart so false, hide neath the semblance of such touching fervor? I took him in. A vagabond, a beggar. 'Tis too much. No more pious folk for me. I shall abhor them all utterly, and henceforth treat them worse than any devil.
So, there you go again, quite off the handle.
Oh.
In nothing do you keep an even temper. You never know what reason is, but always jump first to one extreme and then the other.
What, Father, can the scoundrel threaten you? Forget the many benefits received, and in his base, abominable pride, make up your very favors arms against you.
So true, my son. It tortures me to think on it.
Let me alone. I'll chop his ears off for him.
Spoke like a true young man. Now, just calm down and moderate your towering tantrums, will you? We live in such an age with such a king that violence cannot advance our cause. We're wasting time here in the merest trifling, which we should rather use in taking measures to guard ourselves against the scoundrel's threat.
You think his impudence could go so far?
For one, I can't believe it possible. Why, his ingratitude would be too patent.
Don't trust to that. He'll find abundant warrant to give good color to his acts against you. You never should have pushed him quite so far.
True, true. Yet what could I do? The rascal's pride made me lose all control of my resentment.
I wish with all my heart that some pretense of peace could be patched up between you
two. If I had known what weapons he was armed with, I never would have raised such an alarm.
Hey, who's coming now? Doreen, go quick, find out. I am in a fine state to receive a visit.
Good day, good sister. Pray you let me see the master of the house.
He's occupied. I think he can see nobody at present.
I'm not by way of being unwelcome here. My coming can, I think, nowise mislead him. My errand will be found to his advantage.
Your name, then?
Tell him simply that his friend, Gitarcuke, has sent me for his good.
Master, it is a man who comes with civil manners, sent by Tarcuse, he says, upon an errand that you will be pleased with.
Surely you must see him and find out who he is and what he wants.
Perhaps he's come to make it up between us.
How shall I treat him?
You must not get angry. And if he talks of reconciliation, accept it.
Sir, good day. And heaven send harm to your enemies, favor to you.
This fire beginning suits with my conjectures and promises some compromise already.
All of your house has long been dear to me. I had the honor, sir, to serve your father.
Sir, I am much ashamed and ask your pardon for not recalling now your face or name.
My name is Loyal. I'm from Normandy. My office is court bailiff in despite of envy. And for 40 years, thank heaven, has been my fortune to perform that office with honor. So I've come, sir, by your leave, to render service of a certain writ.
What? You are here to...
Oh, pray, sir, don't be angry. Tis nothing, sir, but just a little summons. Order to vacate, you and yours, this house. Move out your furniture, make room for others. And that without delay or putting off, as needs must be.
I leave this house?
Oh, yes, please, sir. The house is now, as you well know, of course, to see it out too. And he, beyond dispute of all your goods, is henceforth lord and master by virtue of a contract here attached, drawn in due form, and unassailable.
Your insolence is monstrous and astounding.
I have no business, sir, that touches you. This is the gentleman. He's fair and courteous, and knows too well a gentleman's behavior to wish in any wise to question justice.
But,
sir, I know you would not for a million wish to rebel. Like a good citizen, you let me put in force the court's decree.
Your long black gown may well before you know it, Mr. Court Bailiff. Get a thorough beating.
Sir, make your son be silent or withdraw. I should be loath to have to set things down and see your names inscribed in my report.
Monsieur Loyal, look, sir, most disloyal.
I have much feeling for respectable and honest folk like you, sir, and consented to serve these papers only to oblige you and thus prevent the choice of any other who, less possessed of zeal for you than I am, might order matter in less gentle fashion.
And how could one do worse than order people out of their house?
Why, we allow you time, and even will suspend until tomorrow the execution of the order, sir. I'll merely, without scandal, quietly come here and spend the night with half a score of officers. And just for form's sake, please, you'll bring your keys to me before retiring. I will take care not to disturb your rest and see there's no unseemly conduct here. But by tomorrow and at early morning, you must make haste to move your least belongings. My men will help you. I have chosen strong ones to serve you, sir, in clearing out the house. No one could act more generously, I fancy. And since I'm treating you with great indulgence, I beg you'll do as well by me and see I'm not disturbed in my discharge of duty.
I'd give this very minute not for this. 100 best gold louis I have left if I could just indulge myself and land my fist for one good square one on his snout.
Careful, Argon. Don't make things worse.
Such insolence. I hardly can restrain myself. My hands are itching to be at him.
By my faith, with such a fine broad back, good Monsieur Loyal, a little beating would become you well.
My girl, such infamous words are actionable, and warrant can be issued against women.
Enough of this discussion, sir. Have done. Give us the paper, and then leave us, pray.
Then au revoir. Heaven keep you from disaster.
May heaven confound you both, you and your master. Well, Mother, am I right or am I not? This writ may help you now to judge the matter. Or don't you see his treason, even yet?
Master, you are quite wrong. You have no right to blame him. This action only proves his good intentions. Love for his neighbor makes his virtue perfect. And knowing money is the root of evil, in Christian charity, he'd take away whatever things may hinder your salvation.
Be still. You always need to have that told you.
Come, Morgan. Let us see what course you are to follow.
Go and expose his bold ingratitude. Such action must invalidate the contract. His perfidy must now appear too black to bring him the success that he expects.
It is with regret, sir, that I bring bad news, but urgent danger forces me to do so. A close and intimate friend of mine, who knows the interest I take in what concerns you, has gone so far for my sake as to break the secrecy that's due to state affairs, and sent me word but now that leaves you only the one expedient of sudden flight. The villain who so long imposed upon you found means an hour ago to see the prince and to accuse you, among other things, by putting in his hands the private strongbox of a state criminal whose guilty secret you, falling in your duty as a subject, he says, have kept. I know no more of it, save that the warrant's drawn against you, sir, and for the greatest surety, that same rascal comes with the officer who must arrest you.
His rights are armed, and this is how the scoundrel seeks to secure the property he claims.
Man is a wicked animal. I'll own it.
Well, the least delay may still be fatal, sir. I have my carriage and 1,000 louis provided for your journey at the door. Oh, let's lose no time. The boat is swift to strike, and such as only flight can save you from. I'll be at your side and guide you to a place of safety. Stay with you until you reach it, sir.
How much I owe to your obliging care. Another time must serve to thank you fitly. And I pray heaven to grant me so much favor that I may someday recompense your service. Goodbye. See to it, all of you.
Come, hurry. We'll see to everything this needful, brother.
Softly, sir, softly. Do not run so fast. Oh. You haven't far to go to find your lodging. By order of the prince, we here arrest you.
Traitor! You say this worst stroke for the last. This crowns your perfidies and ruins me.
I shall not be embittered by your insults, for heaven has taught me to endure all things.
Your moderation, I must own, is great.
How shamelessly the wretch makes bold with heaven.
Your ravings cannot move me. All my thought is but to do my duty.
You must claim great glory for this honorable act.
The act cannot be aught but honorable, coming from that high power which sends me here.
Ungrateful wretch. You forget was I that rescued you from utter misery?
I have not forgot some help you may have given, but my first duty now is toward my prince. The higher power of that most sacred claim must stifle in my heart all gratitude. And to such puissant ties, I'd sacrifice my friend, my wife, my kindred, and myself.
The hypocrite, how well he knows the trick of cloaking him with what we most revere. But if the motive that you make parade of is perfect as you say, why should it wait to show itself until the day he caught you soliciting his wife? How happens it you have not thought to go inform against him until his honor forces him to drive you out of his house? And though I need not mention that he's just given you his whole estate, still if you'd meant to treat him now as guilty, how could you then consent to take his gift?
Pray, sir, deliver me from all this clamor. Be good enough to carry out your orders.
Yes, I've too long delayed his execution. It's very fitting you should urge me to it. So therefore you must follow me at once to prison, where you'll find your lodging ready.
Who, I, sir?
You.
But why to prison?
You are not the one to whom I owe account. You are gone. Recover from your hot alarm. Our prince is not a friend to double-dealing. His eyes can read men's inmost hearts, and all the arts of hypocrites cannot deceive him. He knows the false and views it with disgust. This fellow is by no means apt to fool him. A scoundrel known before by other names, whose horrid crimes detailed at length might fit a long-drawn history of many volumes. Our monarch, to resolve you in a word, detesting his ingratitude and baseness, added this horror to his other crimes, and sent me hither under his direction to see his insolence outtop itself, and force him then to give you satisfaction. Your papers, which the traitor says are his, I'm to take from him and give you back. The deed of gift, transferring your estate, our monarch sovereign, will make null and void. And for the secret personal offense your friend involved you in, he pardons you. Thus, he rewards your recent zeal displayed in helping to maintain his rights, and shows how well his heart, when it's least expected, knows how to recompense a noble deed and will not let true merit miss its due, remembering always rather good than evil.
No heaven be praised.
A happy outcome.
Who would have dared to hope it?
There, traitor. Now you're...
Brother, hold, and don't descend to such indignities, I beg you. Leave the poor wretch to his unhappy fate, and let remorse suppress him, but not you. Hope rather that his heart may now return to virtue. Hate his vice, reform his ways, and win the pardon of our glorious prince, while you must straightway go and on your knees repay with thanks his noble, generous kindness.
Well said. We'll go, and at his feet kneel down with joy to thank him for his goodness shown. And this first duty done with honors due, we'll then attend upon another too, with wedded happiness reward Belair, and crown a lover noble and sincere.
You have just heard Tartuffe by Molière, adapted for radio by James Church. The orchestra was under the direction of Joseph Hante, and today's cast was as follows. Tartuffe, John Brewster. Argon, Charles Webster. Elmire, Florence Malone. Damis, Burford Hamden. Marianne, Ray Wright. Valère, Chester Stratton. Leonte, Dwight Weiss. Doreen, Mary Michael. Madame Pernell, Jean Owen. Monsieur Loyal, Joseph Austin. A police officer, Sean Dillon. The Great Plays series is a public service feature of the National Broadcasting Company, a drama guide giving complete background material for the Great Plays by Blevins Davis, who arranged for the series, is available to our radio audience at the cost of 25 cents. Send coin or money orders to Columbia University Press in care of Great Plays, Columbia University.